If I couldn't race them, I'd just have to stalk them. From behind the barriers dividing spectators from the female Olympic marathoners snaking along the River Thames. The pavement separating me from the runners was no larger than the gap that just weeks earlier in Eugene, Oregon, stood between me and Emma Coburn, the eventual Olympic Trials 3,000-meter steeplechase champion. Until the big spill, that is. In the middle of that race, every steepler's worst fear became reality, as both my body and my 2012 Olympic dreams came crashing down, the former straight into the water pit, the latter into another arduous 4-year wait. Competing here in London had been a distant goal since my freshman year at Rice University, when my coach convinced me I had an unusually quick recovery rate and a huge upside. But it was only in my last track season that I climbed high enough in the ranks of the American distance fleet to actually envision myself as an Olympian without feeling like an imposter. Qualifying for the U.S. Olympic track and field team is a little bit like nailing a mosquito with a slingshot on cue, a matter of skill, luck, and impeccable timing. Assuming you're healthy and supremely fit in the Olympic year, a tall order on its own, you first have to run the Olympic trials standard to prove you're among the 24 fastest Americans in your event, with the exception of the marathon, which has a separate trials and qualifying process. Then you have to make it out of the preliminary round at the trials and finish in the top 3 in the final. And finally, you must run the Olympic A standard at the trials or in an earlier race. Sickness, off days, and misjudged water pits, although unfortunate, are not taken into consideration when it comes to determining Team USA, the hardest team to make, as ads sprawled across Eugene reminded me. It would be a while until I got another chance, but it was too late. I was hooked on running, my fate as certain as the family of Coy, a couple $100 ahead, that my siblings and I once relocated from the neighbor's fish pond to our bathtub. If not for the Watson Fellowship, I would be in a very different position, shaking off my disappointing performance with visits to a few of the dozen professional training groups scattered around the country, and what else? Miles upon miles of running, both a punishment and a solace. But my race's outcome had been written. And though these 100 whippet-like Olympians were a crushing reminder of my recent nationally televised mishap, I was captivated. As the runners flew by in their colorful race singlets, some leading their packs and others settling behind, I made mental notes of it all. Stride mechanics, arm carriage, body sizes, form flaws, signs of suffering, and visceral shows of strength. Someday, I thought, if I do things right, this glimpse of the world's best marathoners might come in handy. Though I was a steeplechase and 10K specialist in college, long tempo runs and high volume workouts were my forte. I'd always felt a magnetic pull toward the marathon. For now, though, I found myself in a stationary position behind the metal railing. And though I was watching comfortably from the sidelines, thankful to be there as a willing spectator rather than by force of injury, I was also more mobile than I had ever been, just days into a year-long global adventure. For the first time in my life, I would be running without structure, and I intended to keep it that way for the year. Jim Bevan, my college coach, agreed to guide me from afar, monitoring my weekly mileage and emailing me flexible workout plans. But my exploration of new training styles would take precedence over my own running, and I wouldn't do any serious racing until I returned to the United States. To feel like I was still moving forward, still climbing the ranks, I framed the year ahead as an extended base building block, a chance to develop my aerobic system and experiment with new elements before, hopefully, entering the world of professional running after my return. London, England, my first destination, was shaping up to be the ideal place to kick off my tour. Not only was London hosting the 2012 Summer Olympic Games, it also had a sizable and growing recreational running community. I didn't know just how much this historic and international city would challenge my assumptions about running. Though I'll always opt for a spot on the starting line, the sideline of the Olympic marathon wasn't a bad alternative. As I jockeyed for position behind the barricade, waiting for the female leaders to fly by, I wasn't sure whether to be annoyed or impressed by the crowds. Despite a steady stream of rain all morning and the absence of an injured Paula Radcliffe, England's beloved world record holder in the marathon, it seemed that all of London had flooded the streets in order to catch a glimpse of these running superstars.